Anyway, I want to talk today about the uncertainty principle. It was a concept that I stole from an email someone sent me a long time ago, and it was actually some notes by Nathan Burson. And I found it fascinating and saved it and reworked it a little bit and put my own spin, I guess, on it, you might say. But I do want to give it to you today. Wasn't his title, but I think it's a fascinating one, the uncertainty principle. Let's go to Isaiah 3. You know, it has been said that there is a marked difference. There's a marked difference between stupidity and genius. What do you think that difference is? Genius has its limits. Stupidity doesn't have the same limits on it. Our world today is becoming more and more stupid. And it was prophesied. God said that the world would become more stupid. He actually told us our society at the end would become more incompetent than ever. That we'd be double-billed by the phone company, that we'd be sent the wrong product in the mail. And he understood that our mechanic wouldn't understand how to fix something, and he'd spend all kinds of extra money trying to do it, and he'd act like he knew, but he really wouldn't know. He knew all that. He knew that we couldn't hire someone to do the simplest task and expect it to be done right. We'd have to redo it over again. We find it botched up. And he prophesied all this because he knew it would happen. We'd get it all backwards. Isaiah 3 and verse 1. For behold, the Lord of hosts, does take away from Jerusalem and from Judah the stay and staff, the whole stay of bread, and the whole stay of water. The mighty man and the man of war, the judge and the prophet and the prudent and the ancient. Well, he's going to take all of them away too. The captain of 50 and the honorable man and the counselor and the cunning artificer and the eloquent orator. And I'll give children to be their princes and babes shall rule over them. And the people shall be oppressed every one by another and every one by his neighbor. The child shall behave himself proudly against the ancient, and the base against the honorable. Wow. Is that happening today or what? And is that stupid? Why are we doing that? Why are we so messed up? Why are we repeating history the way we are? We just haven't learned the lesson of history. You know, in ancient times, God's people did the same thing. We're following the same pattern. They got more and more stupid. They left God. And they left the true values. They lost sight of the truth. And because of that, they were destroyed. Look at verse 8. For Jerusalem is ruined, and Judah is fallen, because their tongue and their doings are against the Lord, to provoke the eyes of his glory. The show of their countenance does witness against them, and they declare their sin as Sodom, and they hide it not. Of course, we don't do that in Hollywood today. Woe unto their soul, for they have rewarded evil unto themselves. And we're doing the same thing over and over again. And you know what? We're so tolerant of every perverse value and idea and thought out there. We're so tolerant of it, and we're proud that we're tolerant of it, aren't we? We're actually proud of it. So what happens? We protect the perpetrator of crime instead of the victim. We get that dumb. That's really stupid. But we do that, don't we? How did this happen? And why is it that we have then so much rape, so much theft, so much murder going on in our city. Well, we don't protect the victims. Because of this attitude that we have, God is going to bring the curses here in Isaiah 3 that we read. The cunning artificer, today, that's your mechanic. That's who it is. The person who's good at his craft, who can take pride in his work, the person who loves his job, that person's gone. You don't see it. Everybody hates their job. Politics is the rule of the day. The mighty men, the heroes, where are they? Where are they today? It's politics, isn't it? We'll now sell our nation out so we can get elected. It's crazy what we're doing. Where is the person who values another person's life so much they'll lay down their life for that individual? Who is it that you know that would take a bullet for a nice man? What about the prophets today? Who is it that speaks for God today? Look at them. They're on television in their sequin vests and jackets and all their glory, you might say. There's over 33,000 different branches of professing Christianity today. And it's a bizarre set of groups with a bizarre set of values, all disagreeing with one another. And even the Church of God is broken, fractured, scattered. Where's the prophet? Where's the one speaking for God today? Look what's happened to us. We have been replaced, our religious world, by a Babylon of confusion that's out there today. Where's the wise man? Where's the elder that actually knows something and you can go to them and get an answer? And the answer works, and it's right on target. Where is it? It's few and far between today. So God has fulfilled these curses in Isaiah today, just like he said. Now, how has it taken place, though? How has this been fulfilled? I want you to think about that today. It must be understood that everything in life takes place according to certain laws. We understand that mathematically, don't we? We understand it when it comes to physics, don't we? But we forget that those laws apply emotionally. And if you don't follow the laws, you have a breakdown emotionally. And they work psychologically. And we understand that. And we have schools of psychology that study this. But they also work spiritually, don't they? So if you break those laws, they're inexorable. You cannot go around them. If you break them, they will break you, won't they? Yes. And so the events in Isaiah are a result of breaking God's law. And this is an absolute truth in life. The truth is manifest in law. It is manifest in laws. The mechanic has to know the carburetor isn't a radiator. He has to know the difference between a Chevy carburetor and a Ford carburetor, doesn't he? He has to know. And if he does know, he can fix it. But if he doesn't, and pretends he knows, what happens? He messes up your carburetor pretty bad. Yeah. And that's what's going on all around our world today. It really is. So the point is that you can fix electrical problems by carefully following certain specific laws. I used to troubleshoot big panels sometimes, and there's thousands of wires in the panel, and there's a print, and I know Ohm's law, and I know I can take a meter, and I can read where it's open, I could read resistance, I can follow those laws, and I could troubleshoot something, and I could even figure out here on a panel, I know there's an open circuit on the other side of that unit, 15 feet away. I know exactly where it is, because I follow those laws. Today, life is very complex, and so it's hard for people to know everything they need to know. So today we have a man who works at a gas station, knows the difference between a tire and a battery, but the average serviceman doesn't know the intricacies of carburetors. We need to have specialists and so on. Today our wise men, though, are not different than the mechanic. The scholars, they take pride in saying, I don't know. That's what we're doing today. The politicians, they think they're proud to say it. The religious leaders, they're proud to say, I don't know. It sounds almost intellectually superior, doesn't it? Oh, this person's willing to admit it's much more complex. They must be more honest. Well, they're being honest, I think, when they say they don't know. My point is then, why are you a leader in your field if you don't know? But we're misleading people all over the place. It sounds intellectually superior, but it isn't. Now, Professor Alan Bloom was the professor, I forget which college, it was either Yale or Harvard. But he wrote a book a few years back that was a bestseller. It was called The Closing of the American Mind. This professor at a very prestigious college had watched kids come through that college year after year after year through the 50s, through the 60s, 70s, and 80s. And he noticed the changes. And he noticed the liberal teachings in these colleges. The superior, we don't know. We can't be sure. And he wrote a book, and it was called this, The Closing of the American Mind. Now, here's what his point was. We began to close our mind to ever seeing the truth. And he says, here's how it happened. We actually began to think other cultures were just as valid as ours. So what right do we here as professing Christians, what right do we have to say that our religion is superior to the religion of the people in India? Well, you know, to them, their religion is just as valuable and as important to them as it is to us. Ours is to us. And we began to say, well, you know, the culture in China, for example, that's just as valid as our culture. There's no difference. And he said, when we began to do that, we opened our mind to accepting that other cultures were just as valuable as ours, and we closed our mind to ever seeing the truth. Because the people who have a religion in India, they put cow dung on their heads and they drink urine because they think the cow is sacred. Who in the world would really think, you see, it couldn't be more stupid? That can't compare to the Judeo-Christian ethic and the Ten Commandments. What a difference. But you see the point. They could never see that once they opened their mind. So we open our mind to think everything's just equal and all is well. We close our mind to ever seeing the truth. They kill little baby girls in China. We try to save them. It's a big difference. And so we close our mind to ever seeing the truth. Anyway, he wondered how we didn't see the obvious. And he wondered, how could it be that we're so hopelessly lost today that we don't know this obvious truth? What happened to the wise men in our society today? Well, you know what? They've done their magic. They've worked their magic. They have taught people that there is no truth. They've taught people that it's just situational, that in this circumstance, one value might apply or one principle might apply, and then it might not apply in another point in time. And they call it situational ethics. That's what's happened. They have undermined the whole concept of an unyielding, unbending law that is true. And by doing this, we have corrupted ourselves so much that we've blinded ourselves. We've destroyed people's faith in such a law. And in so doing, realize what we've done. We destroyed any concept of sin, which is the transgression of that holy law. It is a transgression of that truth. So this is what's happened in our society. Sin has become, in our world, what do you think they think of it? It's kind of an ethereal term, isn't it? It's a religious term. You never hear it used, do you? You ever hear that in the movies? You ever talk about it? It's become ethereal. It's become something you can't put your hands on. It's something religious people use, and we don't have much to do with that. Now, all of this evolved over time, and it has even infected science today. Now, remember, God said that knowledge would increase, especially at the end time. And it really has. You know, for thousands of years, men thought if they took a chair like this, and they took an egg, you know, like we get from the hen, and we drop them, the chair would drop much faster, they believed, because it was so much heavier. And they had to find out that that wasn't the case. Remember experiments by Galileo, Newton later, who understood gravity and those things. We began to explore these laws. And finally, Newton came to the point where he realized, wait, the entire universe is working according to certain inexorable laws that you could not break. And everything went by these laws. And so man began to think, we can control our universe. We can control our lives. We can learn these laws and we can use them to our advantage. And so this whole age of reason began to develop in this enlightened period. And we have built from there to today to where we realize now we can build spaceships, fly to the moon, get out, walk around, and come back to the earth if we follow those laws exactly. But there was this period where we realized laws made all the difference in every aspect of our life. And that has begun to change. You know, it was in the 20s when the scientists began to realize they didn't know everything they thought they did. It started with, I think, at least I read somewhere, that it was the photon. The photon was the smallest piece of light that existed, and scientists realized they could look out a window at night, let's say, and they could look out the window because the light would pass through the window, right? But they also realized that there was a faint reflection left back in the room. Some of the photons didn't go through the light or the window. Some did and some didn't. So for years they thought, well, there must be some, you know, photons that are different. They've got a different spin, different velocity, they're, you know, different something that prevented them from going through the glass. And then as they continued their studies, they came across the theories of light and quarks, and I forgot the term they use anymore, but forgive me for that, but they came to a conclusion that no, the photons were all the same, but there was a principle involved, and the principle was called the uncertainty principle. And the uncertainty principle meant this: all the photons are the same, they just don't always act the same. Some do, some don't. And we don't really know why. Man, this opened up a lot, a lot of freedom for mankind. Even the creation didn't make sense. Now, Einstein, Albert Einstein, was one of the most, I think, prestigious leaders of the scientific community. He opposed this to his death. He just thought it was crazy. It was a nutty theory. Because he said this, actually, I think it was just before he died, he said this. He said, things don't just happen. They work within laws. And he said, I cannot accept that God plays dice with the universe. The law, he knew that the laws always worked the same. They were perfect. He knew that. But those people that were on his side lost the argument because they eventually died. And the new younger people that came up liked the argument. You know why they liked it? Because if there was no absolute truths, then there was no one could tell them what they should do morally and ethically. So they liked this whole idea and this concept, and it spread. There wasn't a place in time where this idea of the uncertainty principle, where it didn't apply, it seems. I want you to consider economics. Now, you run a budget. You're using math, right? So you know that 2 plus 2 always equals 4. You know that if you spend so much money, you have to make so much money. Look at the brilliant design of our economic system. We originally believed that we had to have a certain amount of gold and we could make a piece of paper that was worth so much gold, right? And the two would be equivalent, because it's hard to carry around gold, you know. I mean, if you had to go buy a car and you took all the gold, you'd have to have another car to drive the gold. But, so, it was a great idea, okay? So we're going to make certificates, and the certificates are going to be worth, 35 of them, let's say, would equal an ounce of gold. And so we had to have gold that represented that. And you could take the 35 pieces of paper in and hand it to them. They give you an ounce of gold for it, right? And they thought, you know what? We could go to silver. We could add the silver in, and we could actually print more money. So they had silver in Fort Knox, and they just went ahead and printed extra money. And they said, now we're going to base the dollar on gold and silver. And then they said, well, you know what? We could actually not have it be based on anything, couldn't we? You remember in the papers years ago? And they said, we're going to pull the gold. We're going to pull our dollar off the gold standard. Now, all the experts in the paper said, don't worry, gold isn't going to go up in price. Well, what is it now? It's $360-some dollars an ounce, isn't it? 10 times. 10 times. But it's going to get far worse, because right now, the dollars we have are worth how much? Nothing. They're only worth what you believe they're worth. And so our economy is based, our currency is based on the faith in the American people have in it. So all we need is one crisis, just one, and people go, I'm not trusting that because it's not based on anything. Give me euros or give me something else, you see. These were the great minds. These were the wise ones. Is that stupid or what? No, it's just not right. But you understand, it has to be preceded. How could they do this? Well, economics is a very complex thing, isn't it? And we can't be certain about all the rules don't always apply in every case, right? Look what happened in the Depression era, see? Who would have ever known that? So we had to have this sense, this principle of uncertainty in order for us to sell people on the fact that we're going to take the money off the gold standard. And now we have an inflationary economy, don't we? And they can just keep printing money. And you know what else they get to do? Loan it to you for interest. They printed money out of nothing and loan it to you, and then they make money off of the loan coming back. So anyway, it's an amazing world. Not real money. Eventually, let's go to Ezekiel 7. Isn't it amazing if you buy a home today? How many times do you think you pay that home off by the time you finally pay it off? 10? I don't think so, but 3 or what? How many? 30 times? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing. Just amazing. Or you buy a car, and how much do you have to pay before you finally have paid it off? It's just an amazing thing. So it's quite a system they designed. And quite a system we accepted. Ezekiel 7. It can't last because it's not built on anything that's true. It can't possibly last. Ezekiel 7, verse 18. Here's what's going to happen, and here's what's coming soon. All the hands shall be feeble, the knees shall be weak as water, They'll gird themselves with sackcloth, and horror shall cover them, and shame shall be, upon all faces, and baldness upon their heads. And they shall cast their silver in the streets, and their gold shall be removed. Their silver and gold shall not be able to deliver them in the day of the wrath of the Lord. And they will not satisfy their souls, neither with bowls, because of the stumbling block of their iniquity. You know what iniquity is, don't you? It's lawlessness, isn't it? It's not going by the law. There's economic laws. They're stealing. That's what inflation is. It's very sophisticated means of stealing. Let's go to Isaiah 32. Consider the uncertainty principle in agriculture, for example. Over millennia, men discovered ways to grow healthy crops. But about 100 years ago, I think it was 4/5 of all Americans, for example, lived on farms and not in the cities. We were very agriculturally dependent. And beginning with the Industrial Age in the early 1900s, men moved off the farm into the city. And then large corporate farms began to develop, and they took over the small ones. And at one time, the farmer realized this. What he took out of the soil had to be replaced with something else. He had to put something back. There's no free lunch, right? And so he was organic, and he realized that the soil was living and that it was also organic. And it was living earth. It nourished the plants, replaced it when they would make these compost piles and they would fertilize things. But the big farms began to complicate farming. It had to be far more difficult to understand and far more difficult to really grasp all the principles that were involved. And so they saw that they could make chemicals that would serve as a fertilizer and make these massive booster crops. They realized that they turned it into a business, of course. And then they thought, well, what we can do here is we can just not rotate crops, not give the land any rest, and we can get an extra crop every year, of course, or every 7 years that way. And they began to confuse the truth. They concluded they didn't have to do all of this and put everything back the way they wanted or the way it should have been. They could use chemicals and so on. And they could do these things without giving the land the rest. And they were acting as if they were not subject to the laws of nature and the laws of God. Isaiah 32:12 says this, "They shall lament for the teats, for the pleasant fields and the fruitful vine. Upon the land of my people will come up thorns and briars, yes, upon all the houses of joy in the joyous city." That we have built monocultures in our greed that are single crop cultures. And there, you can just go across the land and just see just miles and miles of corn, miles and miles and miles of nothing but wheat. But you understand how dangerous that is, because if you get a bug in that stuff, it's all going down. It's not going to be a case of where you have wheat and then corn, and the bugs that like the wheat get to the corn and they stop. It's just going to keep right on going. And so we in all of our wisdom, and I'm being sarcastic, we have forgotten the laws of God. And we thought we could go bypass them. And we've hurt ourselves, I think, dearly, and will in the future. Deuteronomy 28. I want you to think about medicine just for a moment. For generations, we discovered this basic truth that we are kind of what we eat. Most of the illnesses that men suffer today come from what? Our diet, don't they? It's not all that complicated. And today we suffer from heart disease. We suffer, unfortunately, like our wonderful friend with the eye problem, we suffer from diabetes. These are massive, massive problems. Lung disease, cancer from smoking, things like that. millions are suffering. They're all degenerative. They come from what we eat or what we ingest in our bodies. And the typical American diet today, of course, is fatty meats and starches. And it all affects our health. So in the past, we thought of the body, many, many years back, just as a single unit. That's how we thought of it. Today, we teach that the body is much more complex than that. We actually have a view in which we can look at organs as separate pieces of a person's body. And so if something goes wrong with one, we just cut it out. And instead of realizing what the problem really was and fixing the problem, and many of the problems can be fixed, they certainly could be prevented, couldn't they? Can you imagine all the doctors going on television across our land and warning people about the dangers of sugar? Where's that ad? You know? And yet people are blind and they're having their feet amputated and they're struggling every day with diabetes. Well, it doesn't sell pharmaceuticals though, does it? It doesn't sell insulin. It doesn't sell all these things. But you understand my point. Is that, again, there has to be a complexity that is very difficult to understand, that only the experts can understand, and then you have to have uncertainty, and then with the principle of uncertainty, you can accept these things, like, oh, yeah, we have to cut this out and cut that out, and, oh, there really is no, you know, the appendix. You don't need the appendix. It's a leftover from our evolution from many years ago. But you understand, there has to be the uncertainty about this for you to accept it. And so we have accepted it. We can't possibly know. The experts must be right. And so it is. We look out there in the world, and what do we see? Some people live to be 100 years old, and they smoked most of their life, right? And other people ate nothing but French fries, and they lived to be 95, right? And so, how can we be sure that it really affects us? There's this uncertainty, isn't there? Well, no, of course there isn't. You know, there are exceptions to the case. They had an incredible body. You know, some bodies metabolize one way and some another way. But they are not. We shouldn't look at the exception and say this should be the rule. But we do that, and it's tragic. God does see the truth on this, Deuteronomy 28 and verse 59-62. The Lord will make your plagues wonderful. That means awesome, frightening. And the plagues of your seed, even great plagues, and of long continuance, and sore sickness, and of long continuance. Moreover, he'll bring upon you all the diseases of Egypt, which you were afraid of, and they shall cleave unto you. Every sickness and every plague, which is not written in the book of this law, them will the Lord bring upon you until you be destroyed. And you shall be left few in number, whereas you were as the stars of heaven for multitude, because you would not obey the voice of the Lord your God. That is his laws, his health laws. The food laws. For a moment, consider the uncertainty principle in education. Everyone knew the value of education. In fact, you remember one man who was responsible for getting our nation to have public school system, because the importance of an education may just launched us light years ahead of other nations to have it. But in the 20s, people pretty much had around a sixth grade education. Today, most people have to have a college education. I believe that the people that had a sixth grade education back in the 20s had more valuable education than many with college degrees today. There are people, you can go out there right now, and they have. I've listened to programs on the radio where they'll go out and interview college students, and they'll say, who's the vice president? Well, I don't know. Who's Rumsfeld? I don't know. Who's Condoleezza Rice? I don't know. You want to do something interesting? Ask some of your colleagues at work. What is 1/4 divided by 1/2? Ask them and see if they can divide a fraction. You'd be surprised how many people cannot divide a fraction. And nobody knows where countries are today. It's an amazing thing we're going through. When was the Declaration of Independence signed? What about Western civilization? How did we come to be the nation we are? What are our roots? They don't know. They just don't know. They know how to make money. They know how to do that. But they really don't know much of anything else. 80 years ago, something was expected of children. There was a measure of discipline. There was honesty that was expected. There was honor in the classroom. Today, I've talked to the teachers when I did AC on their schools, and you know what's going on today? It's an amazing thing. Teachers tell me this. They say, here's what's going on. I have to pass the students. They come to me. They don't know anything. I give them a test to see where they're at. They all flunk it, and I want to go back and teach them from the beginning. And I get called into the office because the parents went to the principal and told the principal, my kid, you can't give my kid an F. So the principal comes under fire. He goes back to the teacher and says, you got to pass them. That's what they're telling them. You have to pass them. And then what we got all these psychologists, and the psychologists did their studies and said the important thing and the reason now that the kids are doing so bad in school, they have a poor self-image. So we have to teach them how to have self-esteem. So we spend, you know, probably millions of dollars in the U.S. doing studies on self-esteem, and we work with the kids and we help build their self-esteem, and now we have kids that believe if anyone can do the job, it's me. But they can't divide a fraction. They can't do any work. They can't really accomplish anything, and they don't know anything, and their grades are terrible, and they've been pushed through the system. It's remarkable. How do we get this stupid? What was wrong with discipline in the schools? What was wrong with teaching values? We pulled prayer out of the schools. Pulled any speaking of God is pulled out of the schools. And we're building a generation that knows nothing about laws that work for them and laws that will break you if you don't keep them. Tragic, isn't it? We are so stupid. It's the uncertainty principle. It's what Bloom was talking about. In the old days, you had to enforce those rules. Jeremiah 8. Children were disciplined. Now here's the thing for you parents. Here's the beauty. This is so true. I remember speaking to a very wonderful 60-some-year-old lady in a congregation many years ago. And she said, Art, until I was called, I never, ever, ever said no to myself. I didn't even know how to do it. And then God called me, and I had to start putting my foot down on stuff and telling myself no, and I didn't know how to do it. It's so valuable. You see, if you teach a child with external discipline, then when it comes time for them and they have a goal they want, they're able to discipline themselves and move towards that goal. But are we really disciplining our children today? No. I stood right next to a parent of a 16-year-old, and the father was telling that 16-year-old that he had better shape up, and the kid says to his father, what are you going to do about it? You can't touch me. You touch me, I'll call the authorities. Until I'm 18, I get a free ride here, and you can't touch me. How do we get this stupid? It's amazing, isn't it? Well, because our great minds have told us you can't be certain that this is the cause. And, we, you know, they thought that maybe that we didn't really know how we should do this, and maybe we're hurting these kids by restricting them. So today you can't do that, and you can't do it in the school system. You can't give them any real correction. God is removed from our schools today. Jeremiah 8, verse 8. How do you say we're wise, and the law of the Lord is with us? We have them saying that all over across the United States and on all kinds of TV channels. God is with us. Lo, certainly in vain made he it, the pen of the scribe is in vain. The wise men are ashamed. They're dismayed and taken. They have rejected the word of the Lord, and what wisdom is in them? Oh, tragically, very little wisdom left in our nation. No wisdom. They don't know. And the children aren't learning. The authorities told us it was complex. We needed to build self-esteem. And here's what we have produced, Proverbs 30. Proverbs 30. This is our society today, I believe. In verse 12, so aptly described, there is a generation that are pure in their own eyes. Well, they got plenty of self-esteem. And yet they're not washed from their filthiness. There is a generation. Oh, how lofty are their eyes, and their eyelids are lifted up. They're so proud. They know all the words of the rap songs. They know all of the rock stars. They're smart. There is a generation whose teeth are like swords and their jaw teeth as knives to devour the poor from off the earth and the needy from among men. I remember doing air conditioning on some of the convalescent homes, and the ladies would tell me they had to be so careful they'd get their check. They'd go down to the bank and cash it, and young punk kids would steal these elderly ladies' purses. It's amazing, the world we live in. So we've rejected God, and we've rejected his laws in our educational system. It's coming back on us. Now let's think about it religiously. In order to fulfill Isaiah 3, as God said he would, then he had to do away, or we had to do away with the law of God and belief in it. So the way of the mechanic, the philosopher, the scientist, and the hero all went the same way, and the religious community followed it. Life had to be uncertain. There was a life without absolutes. And if you remember when you were a teenager, did anybody ever tell you, so-and-so, life isn't black and white. It's shades of gray. Remember that? Was it really? Or had they just come to accept that? You see, the uncertainty principle was implanted in your mind. You can't be sure. How many heard that? I remember I did. I argued with them, and I argued. But that's the way life was. To me, it's no more evident than in the churches today where you see ministers prance and dance around the stages. They don't blow a trumpet in the marketplace anymore, do they? Not like the Pharisees did. No, no, no. They have a band, an entire band. And then as the minister's speaking, it's choreographed. And you'll watch them, they'll build the music, will rise as he crescendos to make his point. Or when he's going to heal someone, there'll be a drum roll. You know, it's just amazing, the world that's out there today. The cheap glitter on the stage has replaced the glory of God. The crying and the running mascara has replaced true repentance. And preachers today, they're pretty much uncertain about most things. We have to live by faith, they tell us. The Bible says prove all things, doesn't it? Like, it's not afraid. But you have to take it on faith. Now, generally, let me translate that for you. I don't have the answer, so you have to sort of believe what the church teaches. Isn't that sort of what it is? Yeah. But they don't have the answers. And so there's this uncertainty principle. They're adamant about one thing, however, aren't they? God's law doesn't have to be kept. He did it for us, so we don't have to keep the law. And that's a primary teaching of the professing Christian community today. They will be adamant about this. They'll say, well, yeah, the commandments are good, but generally they don't know what they are, and they certainly don't keep them. They give them lip service. They'll say adultery is wrong. Yes, they will. But then they'll answer, but there's cases, you know, where sometimes it will save a marriage. You ever heard that? I have. I've read it. Yeah, sometimes an affair will make people come to their senses. You understand? This is so wrong. How could we say this? So they'll tell you that we can't judge these things. There are cases where they're different. We can't judge them. And let's go to Deuteronomy 28 again. Psychology has infected religion in our community today. We no longer need Jesus Christ for the forgiveness of sins. We can just go to the psychiatrist or the psychologist, and he'll tell us, you did wrong, but it wasn't your fault. Anyone might have done the same thing in your shoes. And I remember distinctly, the manager of, what was it? What's this brewery over here? Anheuser-Busch. I used to do the air conditioning on the warehouse, and the manager was this really nice guy. And he would chat with me, and I would talk to him a little bit about religion, and he said this to me. He says, don't start it. He said, I spent thousands of dollars going to a psychologist to get rid of my guilt. I'm not going to come back to having guilt again, ever again. That's what he thought religion was. See, look how they don't know. They just don't know what the truth is. We've become so stupid. So he's going to avoid knowing all the rules that are going to make his life a success. He's going to avoid those because he doesn't want to feel guilt when he does wrong. We're fulfilling God's prophecy that we'd be stupid. Deuteronomy 28 and verse 19, where God tells us if we don't obey him, cursed shall you be when you come in. Cursed shall you be when you go out. The Lord shall send upon you cursing, vexation, and rebuke, and all that you set your hand to do, until you're destroyed, and until you perish quickly, because of the wickedness of your doings, whereby you have forsaken me. So many things we do today are just plain dumb, the decisions that we make. We've come to believe that the vast majority of people's opinions are probably valuable or right or valid, and our values can be adjusted to fit the circumstances, but God says differently. Now here's my point as we draw towards the conclusion here. Do you think this isn't happening in the Church of God today? You think it isn't happening? It's difficult to take a stand, isn't it? I really appreciated that. Yeah, who's going to stand up and be counted? There was a story in a psychology book I read a long time ago about some kids. They had a setup. They wanted to know what would happen. They had these kids where they were going to ask them questions, okay? And they had previously told this other kid that they were going to tell something really wacky and untrue. And they were going to have two kids in this class of 20. Two kids in the class of 20 were going to raise their hands, and they were going to say that they believed that was true. And so the instructor got out there and told the story, made their comments, gave this little lesson, and said, now how many really believe in that? And the kids raised their hands, and other kids raised their hands because of the peer pressure, because it was validating what the teacher said. And they found in case after case, the few could influence the many this way. And this is what's going on in the religious world today, and even in the church today, that people are going along with the majority. They're not following this book so much. They're following whatever the church is teaching, aren't they? That's what's going on right now. Difficult to take a stand, because when you stand up, you look different, and you can take some hits. So you tell the brethren, I think you're doing something wrong, right? Scriptures say to do that, got to consider yourself, but it's a friend, isn't it? It's a friend telling you, I think you're making a mistake here. I think you're going in the wrong place. You get answers like this. I know I'm not perfect, but if I do it that way, I'll wind up living out on a tree. What would people think? I'll have to give up everything. Well, I have to stop doing the stuff I really love. Well, the Bible says that we're not to judge one another. That's the kind of stuff you're likely to hear in the Church of God today, instead of thank you so much, what does the Bible say? Let's go to John 8. John 8, 32. The truth is God's laws are immutable. They're always the same. And this is the wonderful beauty of them. God does not change. He's the same yesterday, today, and forever. And the law contained in the Ten Commandments is unchanging forever. They never adjust to fit the situation. And we must not, at the end of the age, get trapped into this idea we can't know. God says this, my word is truth. He says that we have the sure word of prophecy. It's sure. It says this is eternal life, that you know me, Jesus Christ, and the Father. We have to know. Now look, do you remember the apostasy, you who went through this thing? It was amazing. Does everyone remember sermons like Fun with Prophecy? They would mock what we used to teach. They would make fun of it. And then they would say this. We were so sure we knew all the answers. But brethren, we don't know. We don't know. I heard it so often. There was this uncertainty principle that was introduced. We couldn't be sure about US and BC. We couldn't be sure about born again. We couldn't be sure about an awful lot of things. In fact, even maybe the Trinity had some truth to it. How would we know? We need to look to the scholars. You see what happened? And then people were able to be misled. But listen to this beautiful scripture right here in John 8 and starting in verse 31. Then said Jesus to those Jews which believed on him, if you continue in my word, then you are my disciples indeed, and you shall know the truth, and the truth will make you free. Thy word is truth. It's so beautiful, it really is. Look, don't be fooled by this modern quasi-philosophical thought. This is the truth I'm going to tell you. Not knowing is not superior. It isn't superior at all. I say this, it is no less, what we're talking about now, is no less than the original sin that took place. Go ahead, choose for yourself. There isn't any absolute truth, is there? Just choose for yourself. You can't be sure. Hey, do whatever you like. From Satan's point of view, it only has to be slightly different from God's truth to be a lie, doesn't it? Woe to those that mix evil with good. Romans 6:16 says this. It was the sin then, it's the sin today. No uncertainty with God. Know you not that to whom you yield yourselves servants to obey, his servants you are to whom you obey, whether sin unto death or obedience unto righteousness. It's not a case of various shades of gray and we're really okay because we're just gray. We haven't gotten into the red yet. We're not on empty yet. But God be thanked that you were the servants of sin, but that you've obeyed from the heart that form of doctrine which was delivered to you. Being made free from sin, you became the servants of righteousness. I speak after the manner of men because of the infirmity of our flesh. For as you've yielded your members servants to uncleanness and to iniquity and to iniquity, so now yield your members servants of righteousness unto holiness. See, we've submitted ourselves to this world's way and its philosophy too much. It's on our televisions all the time. It's in the newspapers. It's on the commentaries all the time. I say this, look, it's just an excuse that we don't really know. We can't be sure. You think you can't be sure of your standing with God? You pray to him? You can be sure. You can. He'll motivate you by the Spirit. But my point is, not being sure is an excuse to not conform to God's law. The uncertainty principle has crept into every single aspect of life. I believe this. And has created this miserable world that you and I live in today. You and I are commanded, come out of this world. So I ask us to leave its deceit and its lies behind. We can be absolutely sure, he says, if we continue in his word, continue reading it, continue striving to live it. So let's not let this principle that has affected so many affect our choices we make in life. Let's commit ourselves today to following God and striving to follow God's law, no matter what the circumstances are. Because we do know. We really do.